Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is Plan for the Best Year in 2025 with special guests, Dr. April Schweinhart and Riley Jones. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to episode 11, season 2 on Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. This podcast is hosted by the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. My name is Holly Raffel, and I have the privilege of serving as the faculty director of the center. As we look to begin 2025 and peer into that new year that's coming, it's the perfect time for organizations to revisit foundational elements of the Strategic Prevention Framework, or SPIF, such as needs assessment data, logic models, and strategic plans. These tools, among others, can be helpful in guiding organizational goals and objectives while giving staff a sense of ownership of their work and offering valuable context for new team members or employees. To help us dig into this content, today we're talking to Dr. April Schweinhart. As a senior research scientist, Dr. April's work at the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation, commonly known as PIER, has focused on evaluating and supporting implementation of substance use disorder prevention, treatment, and recovery, among other things. She also has a strong interest in the impact of interpersonal violence on individuals, families, and communities, and of course, the role prevention and intervention play in that space. While it's important to take an annual look at the work that you're doing in the community, it's also important for us to assess our personal professional development each year. And to help us think through how to do that, we're also joined by Riley Jones. Riley is a program manager within the Center for Prevention Science at Prevention First. She's an Ohio certified prevention specialist and certified health education specialist. Riley is passionate about professional development and expanding the field of prevention. As an Ohio Coaching and Mentoring, or OCAM, network coach and mentor, she is responsible for managing the OCAM training calendar, facilitating trainings, and processing all CE hours and certificates of attendance. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining us, Dr. April and Riley.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Holly. I'm really happy to be here today.
So our listeners really enjoy getting to know our guests beyond the bio that I read. So we always hold some time at the beginning of the show where y'all can share with our listeners something about who you are beyond your bio. So maybe a little bit about what your work looks like on the daily, which part of your work you enjoy the most, or a little nugget about who you are at the person. Riley, would you like to go first?
Sure. I would say my favorite part of my job is that every day looks a little bit different. Maybe one day I'm facilitating a training out in the community. Maybe one day I'm planning a conference. And the next day I'm sitting in Excel at my desk all day. I love the balance of that. I feel I'm an outgoing introvert, so having that balance works well for me. A fun little nugget about me as I'm currently getting my master's in public health online through Kent State. They have a concentration in behavioral health. And I have a black cat named Willow.
That is so exciting, Riley. I didn't know you were working on your NPH. How far along are you?
It's actually finals week this week. I'm wrapping up my first semester.
Well, congratulations and happy finals week to you.
Well, thank you.
Dr. April, how about you? What's a little nugget beyond your bio?
Thanks, Holly. And I just want to go ahead and take the opportunity to say thank you for inviting me to share about strategic planning on this month's podcast. I'll also go ahead and jump in on that. Congratulations to Riley. As you stated, and I really appreciate you stating both my interest in working with substance use prevention as well as interpersonal violence prevention. It's really important to me that we continue to share and educate the public on the pervasive issue of intimate partner or interpersonal violence, as it's a significant public health issue and has profound impacts on lifelong health, opportunity, and well-being. It's important to remember that it's also a preventable issue, as you said. Talking about it and bringing it into the open is a way that we can help survivors navigate towards finding help. And then I'll kind of echo Riley's personal nugget and say that I have a black and white dog named Kepler, and he is named after Johannes Kepler, the famous astronomer.
Thank you so much, Dr. April, for all the work that you're doing in Kentucky on interpersonal violence. So today we're focusing on the transition to 2025. Dr. April, you've worked on SPIF projects in four states, Alabama, New Mexico, Idaho, and of course, Ohio. And your work in Ohio runs deep as part of Ohio's Community Collective Impact Model for Change and the Ohio Adult Allies Initiatives. In addition, you and I have the privilege of working together on the HRSA-funded Community of Practice for Rural Communities Opioid Response Program, which Ohio University and PIRE collaborate and serve Ashtabula, Fairfield, Sandusky, and Seneca counties. And through that, you and I have talked about the theory of strategic planning and the practice of strategic planning over and over again. And so for our listeners who's never been through that strategic planning process, can you share your definition of a strategic plan and why those plans are important to organizations?
Of course. Although, you know, it's not like you're starting me on a too difficult topic. Just define strategic planning. I don't even know where to start. But I think you can kind of talk about it in two ways. So there's general strategic planning. It's just a way of saying you want to make a plan to address your organizational goals in a way that is smart, or put another way, strategic, right? All kinds of organizations need to plan strategically to ensure that activities remain consistent with their mission and vision and determine the most important goals or initiatives that they want to undertake in the coming years. But of course, more specifically, in the way that you spoke about strategic planning, is within the context of the Strategic Prevention Framework, or the SPIF. The framework provides much more direction for strategic planning and is specific, much more so than the general definition. Planning is just one of the five phases of the Strategic Prevention Framework and involves building a logic model that starts with a specific problem, identifies the risk and protective factors associated with that problem, and then selects appropriate strategies to address those risk and protective factors. In this way, the logic model identifies the specific strategies needed to work on the root cause of the identified problem and ensure that big problems like what we're talking about, substance misuse, interpersonal violence, mental health challenges, can be broken down into smaller, solvable, and actionable steps.
Wow. Every time I hear you talk about the context of strategic planning and how strategic planning and the SPIF are alike and how they're different, I learn new tips every single time. And as you and I know, we could talk about this for hours, and we've done that. But I'm curious, in your opinion, what are the most critical elements of a strategic plan or strategic planning in general?
I'm really glad that you asked that question, because I get to talk about something I learned from you, which is the logic model itself and then the action planning guide. So these two things are related. The logic model connects the large overall problem to specific root causes, as I said, that can then be acted upon, and the action plan details the steps for doing those. Because the strategic prevention framework and strategic planning need to be a data-driven process, it's important that there's evidence to support the link between the identified problem you're working on and its root causes, or the risk and protective factors affecting that problem. The data-driven decision-making in terms of identifying appropriate strategies lets the logic model itself become a critical element, because it provides supporting evidence as to why it's so important to act on a specific problem using a specific identified strategy. And then, as I said, the action plan takes that strategy that you've identified and breaks it down into actionable, reasonable, and practical steps. It asks the who, what, when, how of each step of your plan. So previous work can point the way to specific strategies that are known to be effective in addressing the different risk and protective factors that you've identified, but without a plan of action, strategies can become stagnant. The action plan identifies a person or persons in charge, a timeline for accomplishing the activities, and the how of the strategic plan.
Oh my gosh, listening to you talk, Dr. April, it brings me back to 2009 when we originally brought the strategic prevention framework to the prevention community here in Ohio. And you know, we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of the SPIF this year. And I remember what was foundational for me was working with Dr. Debbie Zorn, who's now retired. She was at the University of Cincinnati when she talked about how that theory of change or logic model needs to be separated from the theory of action, and how people kind of, they like that theory of action because it's the doing and who does what. But you do, in order to create the change you're seeking, have to have that theory of change because it drives your strategy of selection. And just to see where we've come, you know, in those, you know, within this 20-year span is amazing. But this work isn't easy, as the both of us know, as people who've had to do it ourselves or also walk the walk with community leaders when they're doing that. So what are some common challenges that community leaders or community organizations face when they are initiating the strategic planning process?
In all of the work that you described earlier and other work that I've done, I think the hardest part for communities and individuals within communities is linking that identified big problem to root causes or the underlying risk and protective vectors. Mm-hmm. So making those smaller steps as to, but why is that happening? But why is that happening? And breaking it down. For many, it can be a struggle to find and understand data to support the activities needed in their community. There may be a consensus, for example, that underage drinking is a problem in a given township or county. But the specific reasons why underage drinking is a problem may be less understood. There's another part of the strategic prevention framework that becomes especially important here, which is assessment. In order to appropriately plan to address prevention, one must first assess what the key problems, risk, and protective factors are in your given local, region, community, area, however you want to think about it. Data to answer this question can come from schools, surveys, focus groups, even your local PTA. But without the data to link the problems to solutions, we're not able to affect change, just like you said.
As I'm thinking through this, you know, I know that we initially didn't intend to come into this podcast thinking about the strategic prevention framework, but Riley, this really brings us to capacity and the capacity that individuals need to have in order to enact strategic planning, and that professional development or workforce development is crucial as we think about getting the prevention outcomes we want or need. So as an OKM coach, you mentor preventionists and aspiring preventionists by providing them the essential tools and knowledge to achieve their Ohio Certified Prevention credential, whether they are seeking to become a registered applicant or RA, a specialist assistant, an SA, or a specialist who is seeking consultant status, so moving from that OCPS to OCPC. So why do you think individual professional development is so important in prevention?
I feel like April, when she said, you know, where do I begin with strategic planning? Because I feel like professional development, I could talk about it all day long. I think there are so many reasons why it's important. And I think that what's nice about professional development is it doesn't have to be one specific thing. You know, it might be attending a training on a topic you're interested in learning more about. It might be getting that prevention credential. Maybe it's simply networking with other prevention professionals, learning from them, getting advice from them, or maybe it's attending a conference. But I think that professional development is super important because it's kind of that gateway for us to always continue growing, learning, building those skills, improving, and making sure that we are doing effective work. We are working in our scope of practice, all those things. I also think specifically for prevention, things are always changing. Things will always be evolving. So I think it's important for us as those prevention professionals to be knowledgeable of those changes, make sure we're evidence-based and updated on all that information.
Riley, I love that you show the many different faces of professional development. Like this podcast could be professional development in a way. You know, what do you think about that?
Absolutely. I always think of professional development. I think we have this mindset that it has to be, you know, maybe you're getting your master's or a new credential, but I think that it's really anything that you're doing to learn. You're listening to this podcast to hopefully learn about strategic planning, professional development. So I really think it can be anything that we do to grow our capacity.
But when we think about growing our capacity, I know that from conversations with you, you're a big advocate in growing your capacity in an organized way. And one of those ways to achieve targeted goals is to create that personal professional development plan. Can you talk about why it's crucial for all professionals to have a professional development plan, regardless of whether they're new to the field or they've been in the field for 25 years?
Yeah, so I definitely would agree that creating that professional development plan is crucial, no matter what your experience level might be, because we do want to always be learning and growing. And that professional development plan, similarly to the strategic plan, can give us that framework of, okay, what are the steps I'm going to take to try to achieve these goals for myself? I have only been in the field of prevention for about 3 years. I sometimes think, you know, I'll be done with my master's in spring of 2026. I can get my OCPC this coming May. So like, what will I work towards? But I think for me, something that helped was starting to think about the different areas of interest I have, how I could explore those, or maybe get involved in other projects. For example, as much as I love substance abuse prevention, I've always been very interested in that mental health, suicide prevention aspect. And that's something I actually told my supervisor I kind of wanted to explore a little bit and learn more about. And now I'm kind of figuring out what that looks like. But I started to attend Hamilton County Suicide Prevention Coalition meetings, and I was asked to become a QPR trainer. And then I kind of found my way into starting to become a local sources of strength trainer. So I think it's really important to lay out, you know, what are my goals? What do I want to work towards, whether it is a credential or learning more about a specific area, and kind of figuring out what are the steps I'm going to take to get there? Is it reaching out to an OCAM coach and working on that professional development plan with them? Is it sitting down and looking at your calendar, thinking, okay, maybe I'll attend this training and this training. Oh, and I'm really interested in this topic. I could attend that. So I think it's really important to just figure out where you're going.
Riley, you have so many nuggets that I'd like to just pause here and unpack, if that's okay with you. The first thing I heard is you mentioned sharing your professional development goals or even ideas with the supervisor. Why do you think it's important to have someone, whether it's an OCAM coach, supervisor, friend, to talk about your professional goals with?
I think it's super important because I feel like for me, with my supervisor, shout out to Sarah Saul-Miller, I bounce my ideas off of her a lot. I think that it's helpful to have someone who is a mentor, whether it's your supervisor or someone you've worked with for a while, whoever that might be, kind of your go-to person of, hey, can I bounce this idea off of you? Can I get some advice from you? I have found that to be one of the most helpful things in the 3 years I've been in prevention, just because my brain is like, how can we improve this? How could we do this better? And I have to share those ideas with somebody. So that is one thing that has helped me a lot. And I think that it can definitely help a lot of other people too.
Absolutely. And the second thing I just want to stress is you really brought back and you're practicing kind of what you are doing, what you're telling others to do, right? Your journey into suicide prevention and mental health promotion didn't come with going to a big conference. It came from, let me have this idea, let me have a conversation or network with my supervisor, and double shout out to Sarah because she's a fantastic person to work with. But then it started with, oh, let me attend a coalition meeting, right? So attending those meetings and learning from others and networking is another key component, which led to a formal training or train the trainer, which led to another formal training. So can you just talk about how that process of professional development sometimes isn't linear and it isn't all laid out and it doesn't all have credits, right? Because you're not getting CEs to go to all of those meetings or have those conversations or network.
I love that you put it that way, that growth isn't linear. We know that's true in general, but I love that you applied it to professional development. You know, there are going to be highs and lows of your career and where you're going, and maybe sometimes you change your mind a little bit, but I love that you said that, and I think that we can't be afraid of having those conversations. And I think that's something that people are scared to be like, I'm not changing my job, but like, I'm interested in this. Could you help me explore this? I think sometimes people are scared of what people might think or how they'll react. But I think, you know, looking at a broad public health spectrum, you know, we know that suicide and mental health and violence and substance abuse and all of the things play into each other. And if you're interested in exploring, then I think you should voice that. Because oftentimes it's most likely going to help our work. I know for me at Prevention First, our mission is a little bit more broad, and it's to prevent behavioral health disorders. So luckily, I am fortunate enough that I could explore those things within my job at Prevention First. But I don't know. I think that that is something that if it's on your heart, you want to explore it. What's the worst that could happen?
Well said. Professional development coming from the heart. And I think I'm going to leave that conversation on that note because it's a perfect time to segue into our next area. And Dr. April, one area I'd like to talk about today is mission creep. And we see that happen at the community level. And mission creep, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with that term, is when you have a mission that your organization is trying to fulfill, and then other things happen slowly over time, and you either creep in a different direction or you also augment your mission to move forward. And sometimes, you know, mission creep, it sounds kind of like a negative thing because of the term creep, but it can be. You know, it's really value neutral because it can be positive or negative. So once an organization's goals, objectives, and strategic plan are established, it is essential to maintain at least some focus on the original mission and purpose to stay true to why your organization exists. But some organizations sometimes take on new projects, new responsibilities, and they really start that creep, which gradually strays them from their core focus. So Dr. April, what strategies or recommendations do you have for staying aligned with the mission and avoiding mission creep?
I agree. That was such a good time to ask that question because, as Riley said, all of these topics we've been discussing, mental health, substance misuse, interpersonal violence, are interrelated to each other. So mission creep becomes pretty easy when you think about it that way. And, you know, I don't think I have anything truly insightful to say other than kind of the point of what we're talking about today, which is to continually review what you said you were going to do, what your mission and vision are, and make sure that you're aligning to those goals. So for me, it's about going back, looking at what I said I was going to do, what I wrote down, whether that's a work plan, a timeline, a chart, and making sure that I'm working within those specific objectives. A lot of the time, we might be working under specific guidelines with specific funding. And so it's also important to ensure that we're good fiscal agents and use funds for what we propose to use them for, which is another reason to review your goals, objectives, and plans. Regular reporting to funders or other key stakeholders can also help ensure that you're meeting your goals as stated, because you have to go back and say, what was it we said we were going to do? Oh, right. So what have we done to accomplish that goal in this timeline when you're making a report? And so that helps you from creeping into other territory as well. It really just means summarizing the work you've done to accomplish those goals in the most recent time. And that helps you remember what were the original goals to start with. Another key way to ensure alignment with your organization's mission and vision is bringing those pieces back into the conversation as well. As you review your strategic plan or make a new one, your organization's mission and vision should be at the forefront, and each identified problem, risk, protective factor should align under those things.
Absolutely, Dr. April. And you know, again, we know that mission creep is value neutral, right? So in what situations do you see mission creep as being part of the growth of an organization?
That is a really important part to talk about as well. I think sometimes the situations in which mission creep becomes necessary kind of make themselves known. So for example, one big one that immediately came to my mind was the COVID-19 pandemic. As someone who often works with federal or state levels of funding, we had projects that we had proposed to do before the pandemic started. But once it hit, our goals and objectives and plans had to change to adjust to all the changes that the world was making. So in that way, it kind of made itself known, right? In other times, it can also be important to recognize the need to shift gears when you encounter new data or evidence. So as we talked about before, planning should be a data-driven process. And as Riley mentioned, during all of those professional development opportunities, you are constantly learning as well. So you might encounter new data or evidence or science that has something to say about your organization's mission, vision, plan, problem, etc. And then it can be necessary to change those plans so that you're keeping up with what the evidence says works.
100%. And talking about keeping up, that really brings Riley into the conversation. And Riley, in professional development, mission creep looks different, right? It could be where people broaden their original goals of their professional development to take on new opportunities in a variety of areas. Why this can be good, like you described in your own career trajectory, moving into the mental health space, it has expanded your knowledge base. It could have a downside too, because you could lose focus on the path forward. And I'm not saying that you have. It's just, what's the balance between what a person should think about when creating their personal professional development plan and, you know, kind of staying on track versus that exploration piece?
Yeah. And I definitely think that can be something that can be a little bit tricky, because your professional development plan is specific to you as an individual, which can mean I get to explore everything, but you gotta stay on track sometimes. So I think that, you know, while you are creating your professional development plan, let's say you put on there that you want to get your OCPS. Sit down, you figure out, okay, what are the education requirements? What do I still need to fulfill those requirements? Make sure you have all of that done. And then maybe that's your time to explore, oh, I'm really interested in a training on, I don't know, emotional intelligence. And I can, so I'm going to explore that. I think it's definitely a balance of finding the things that are going to help you in your position. You know, maybe you're, for example, doing a lot of needs assessment data stuff. So you go to a training on that. I think it's really finding a good balance between the things you are interested in and the things that will benefit your specific job, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. And I love how both of you alluded to sometimes the situation presents itself, right? So in your case, if you want to get certified, you've got to meet the requirements. And as Dr. April said, you know, when COVID-19 came, we had to make those adjustments. And so it's being open to the environment in all aspects of looking forward. And I could talk to both of you forever, but it is getting close to the time where we have to park this van. So as we wind down the podcast, I personally like to leave our listeners with tools and resources. And to our audience out there who is taking a self-care walk or maybe listening to us on the road, you know that Dr. Angela always puts in the show notes. So you don't need to stop or write these down. They'll all be here when you look at the notes. So Riley, what tools, resources, professional development opportunities do you recommend for individuals looking to build new skills or advance their careers?
Yeah, I would say the OKIM network is definitely a great one. Our training calendar, trainings at no cost to participants. So that's really nice. Also, if you are looking to get prevention credentials, have questions, you can always reach out to the OKIM coaches. We are always happy to help. I think some other places you can find that network of your people or, you know, get some other trainings. The Center of Excellence, OPA, Ohio Prevention Professionals Association, Prevention First, maybe the Problem Gambling Network, maybe gambling something you want to explore. I feel like there's so many, which I can definitely send to add to the notes for this podcast. Another thing is Andrea Hoff at UThrive. She is an OKAM coach. She and her team have some trainings on creating that professional development plan. And I have a PDF of, it's basically a document that you list out, okay, what are my goals for this year professionally and how am I going to achieve those? So that's a nice little tool. Maybe it's going to a coalition meeting. So I definitely think there's lots of tools out there. Even if you want to email me, I could talk about it all day long. I think those are my tools and resources I can think of.
Wow, we're going to have an extensive list of show notes. Thank you so much, Riley. And Dr. April, I know there's a ton of strategic planning resources out there. Could you just let us know, you know, a couple of your favorites that you would recommend?
Again, these are not going to be super insightful, maybe a little bit obvious even. SAMHSA has a great guide to the Strategic Prevention Framework. Who would have guessed, right? But it also has a whole section on planning, of course. So the guide to SAMHSA's Strategic Prevention Framework is excellent, especially if you're just getting started. And then Ohio Moth has developed, along with Ohio University Empire, has developed videos and tools for planning, including how to develop a logic model. And as I mentioned, this can be one of the harder parts for communities, in my opinion. And what's great about these tools on the pfs.ohio.gov website are that they come in multiple different forms. So there's a quick guide if, for example, you're reviewing your strategic plan and you want to maybe just need a refresher on what a logic model is. There's that quick guide. There's also a whole video on making a logic chain or a logic model. So if those words we were talking about earlier, theory of change and logic model and logic chain, if these are all things that are new to you, watching the video might be helpful. And then there's also the Community Strategic Plan Map template that's on the website as both an annotated version and a blank version, which is something that I will give you credit for, Dr. Holly Raffel. I think it was such an excellent idea to put up the annotated version as well as the blank version, because that lets you know what each box in that template is really supposed to do and how it's helpful to your community organization.
Thank you for all those resources. And I appreciate the shout out. And again, that that strategic plan map was built with so many collaborators in the original strategic prevention framework, state incentive grant or SPIF-SIG. It just makes me smile to go back in time and think as the SPIF turns 20, how much work Ohio has done in that space. So it is that time of the podcast where we ask our guests a few rapid fire questions to close our conversation. And this is our listening audience, one of their favorite parts. So in the spirit of the new year, I have some New Year's would you rather questions for you. So Riley, let's start with the music, because no New Year celebration is complete without it. Would you rather have a DJ or a live band?
I think I'm going to go DJ.
Dr. April, how about you?
Oh, I'm 100% live band.
And further discussion about the new year just wouldn't seem right if we didn't talk about New Year's resolutions. So, Dr. April, would you rather resolve to a home declutter or a digital declutter?
Gosh, I don't even know what a digital declutter would mean. So I'm going to go with home declutter. That's been on my list to do anyway.
Riley, how about you?
I feel like that one's hard. I want to do both. I might go home. I might go home.
All right, two homes. So finally, we asked this question of all of our podcast guests. So you're at that New Year's Eve celebration. You reached into that candy dish that's filled with M&Ms. Are you looking for plain or peanut? Dr. April, how about you?
Peanut, but if I can make an exception, I'll say peanut butter.
Oh, true, true. Riley, how about you?
I would go plain, but I'm with April. If peanut butter is an option, I'm all for it.
There we go. Thank you so much, Dr. April and Riley, for taking time out of your schedule to talk about planning at the personal level and the community level. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing it with others, posting about it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and keeps the prevention conversation going. To catch all the latest from the center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. If you missed our last podcast, it was with Jessica Zavala from the Ohio Program for Campus Safety and Mental Health at NeoMed, Burke Steinman from Prevention Action Alliance, and Maureen Fagans from United Senior Services in Clark County. During our conversation, we identified unique mental health challenges and needs associated with different populations and explored practical coping strategies and resources to support mental health and reduce social isolation across varied communities during the holiday season and also year-round. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Productions and is supported by Dr. Angela Zhang at the Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. Thank you all for your work to get positive prevention content out in the world.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention Podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. For more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.